Julie Tan, this is Earthwatch. We were speaking about the interesting battle about when and how to kill Mir between the United States, Soviet Union. Part of that, Soviet Union, Russia, part of that comes from a report that was released just only this week by the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. It's called the Chabro Report. You can see it for yourself by going to the NASA website, nasa.gov, and looking around in the office of the Inspector General. Just to summarize, and there's a fine description of the issue and the current issue of a fine newspaper called Space News. Among the conclusions of the Inspector General of NASA, NASA's funding request for the station in the five-year budget request beginning in 1999 is inadequate to cover known costs of the International Space Station and expected program growth. Additional annual funding of $130 million to $250 million will be required. We're talking about something that's costing tens, more likely hundreds of billions of dollars. Completion of station assembly in low Earth orbit is likely to be delayed beyond December 2003. And here's the interesting part now. The possibility of Russian non-performance is the major threat to the program, the panel concluded. According to the report, decisions to bring the Russians into the critical path of station development, to count on them to save us money, and to expect Russia to comply with its non-proliferation obligations have backfired. And Representative James Sensenbrenner, he is a cold warrior who is very influential on many space committees in Congress, is echoing those sentiments. Russian participation in the project has caused an 11-month delay to station assembly and about $1.5 billion in additional NASA costs, and has not achieved its stated goal of ensuring Russia's compliance with the missile technology control regime, said Sensenbrenner. With Russian government leadership in flux, the future of cooperation among Russian and American officials on space issues is a subject of questions on both sides. Russia's lower, more powerful house of parliament, the Duma, approved President Yeltsin's nomination of Sergei Kiryenko as the new prime minister, and he will replace Viktor Chernomyrdin, who was ousted by Yeltsin on March 23rd. He and Vice President Gore have had various meetings on cooperation. But a U.S. official said April 24th that Russian-American cooperation begun under the commission is expected to continue even under the new leadership. But, as we said before, and there's more here, but basically it comes down to cash flow. And unless Russia is provided with another income generator to replace Mir, Mir will fly. You're on the air.
Oh, good evening. Sorry, I had to kill the radio there. Hello, Robert?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Once again, I must congratulate you for providing such a wonderful forum and venue. And I must also congratulate you for having been corrected by Monty. I think that needs to be done, and I know that you understand, and I'm so glad that you two all would be able to get together on that issue. I missed a large part of the show. But I'm calling because you said something earlier. You said it seems as though the solar system is coming alive. Do you remember when you said that?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'd like to make a comment. According to some very old belief systems, the solar system is alive. That is to say that, you know, kind of like mayflies, that's us, because everything else is a lot bigger. And, of course, as a result, a mayfly whose life to us is only a single day, to them, we're a kind of inscrutable object, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The Earth we're on is alive.
Mm-hmm. Indeed it is. And I totally am a subscriber to that belief system. In fact, I've attempted to codify some of it with a word that I invented some years ago called biomorphic cosmology, which assumes that not only is the Earth living, but every bigger body of which it is only an organ.
Thank you. You got it 100%. I would suggest, have you ever read a book called The Theory of Celestial Influence?
I don't remember whether I have read that one or not.
All right. This is a book which you would enjoy. It has been reprinted. It was originally published by Weiser. It's been reprinted lately by Shambhala and a few other things. I don't know if it's currently in print.
Shambhala has always had good catalogs.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing is that the theory of celestial influence, again, I called before and I made some other statements about other things, is a very rare thing, that is to say, a totally accessible English language version of information which is contained in a variety of belief systems which are very, very old. And the whole point is that the whole solar system is alive. If you think of the Earth as a single cell, that helps. But the most important thing is this. The meteors, the showers, the impact on Jupiter, this is, if you will, something like feeding. This is a natural thing?
Oh, sure. There's a circulation. There are electrons that stream every 13 months between Jupiter and the Earth. There's so much I don't want to use the word infection, but...
Well, that's a good word to use. It can be used.
Yeah. Fertilization.
Yes,
among
good,
planets.
Good. Circulation, like circulation of blood. The sun is, in fact, much like the heart, in that it is constantly pumping an energy that we are receiving. And the point is this, is that according to these systems, we, people, and all life on the surface of the Earth is something like the intestinal bacteria we have.
Mm-hmm.
Our job is to help transform the energies.
May I take a moment to maybe try and run the football further with the point you're making?
Go ahead.
I'm going to quote from my own webpage, if you'll indulge me, which is at World Wide Web, www.wbaifree.org/earthwatch. And this is just a short section on my actual attempt to explicitly say what my concept, or this concept, biomorphic cosmology is. It's based on a term that your host coined to describe his approach to a living universe. Biomorphic cosmology, from the roots bio, meaning life, and morphic, meaning form, and cosmo, meaning universe, and logi, or logos, meaning discourse, literally speaking of the universe as a form of life. In other words, the universe seems to represent itself as embedded layers of living systems. Earthwatch guest Jim Lovelock's Gaia hypothesis, approximating the Earth as a living system, is a local application of biomorphic cosmology. Consider that terrestrial life exists primarily as a creation of the sun. Energy, nutrition, photosynthesis, and vision are predetermined by the sun's energy spectrum, 98% of which is concentrated in what we just happen to call visible light.
There you go.
Yet the sun, like its humanoid creation, has a heartbeat in the form of an 11 or 22-year heliomagnetic sunspot cycle.
There you go, there you go.
The blood of the sun, the blood of the sun is the ionic plasma circulating through the body of the solar system in the form of a solar wind.
Go on, preach.
Then the sun itself is blowing in the galactic wind as it orbits the black hole at the galactic center.
Thank you.
Which in turn is an organ orbiting the clustered metagalactic body beyond the constellation Virgo.
There you go.
These repeatedly embedded metaphors of life in the universe and the explicit gravitational and electromagnetic interconnections among these bodies lead to a profound conclusion. Every living thing is part of a larger living thing. Wheels within wheels.
Rabbit?
Yeah.
Go on, preacher. You got it, B. You got the big picture.
Glad to know we're not alone.
There you go. Now, I just want to make a comment on that.
Sure.
In the history of the Dogon people, who were talking about Sirius and a stack of other things way back before there was any Europeans even peering through pieces of glass, their timetable ends right around now. There's a lot of other historical calendars. A lot of people say it's the end of the world. It's not the end of the world. It's a monster change. It's cycles. What's happening, we are approaching a big one, you know, a big downbeat on a very long, to us, a very long tune. In the great scheme of things, it's really just a heartbeat. But for us, we're like gnats in an elephant's ear, you know? We have a very short time.
Yeah.
But the fact is that we are getting very close. All these perturbations, all these things that are happening, wars and rumors of wars and all this other stuff, we are approaching that downbeat. Now, the fact is that some of the people... for example, the Van Flanders thing, that when he was talking on your show, his particular theory, you know, about certain things, which I expressed before, has been in fact expressed in the Islamic mysticism and quite a few other things going way, way, way back. It'd be almost exactly the same. I say this. We are part of a very large circulation of a circulation of a circulation. Things are coming back around. We're getting close back to Galactic Central. We are going to be close enough that the visits which occur at those times are going to occur again. But maybe this time we'll be awake. Maybe we won't have killed ourselves off, because this usually seems to be what has happened. You know, it's very interesting times, but like the Chinese say, when they say, may you be born in interesting times, a whole stack of stuff comes with that, you know. And all I got to say is, again, I thank you so much for providing this wonderful, wonderful meeting place. And I say this, Morningstar, keep on keeping on, bro. Thanks, Robert. Good night.
Well, you said a mouthful, and you got me thinking.
Good, but I got to say this to you. I don't know how you arrived at this on your own, because you obviously don't have the background, but you have, through your own efforts, peered very close.
What do you mean about background? Hello? You there? What do you mean about background?
Well, you don't have the background in the various religions. You've come around these things, but you don't have... There are interior, exterior, you know, it doesn't matter. But the point is, again, these are not new ideas. But the fact is that if a man knows there's a camera, even if he's never seen one, and he's got it, he can invent one. It may not be the same camera, but still it's a camera. And you are doing that, and I must congratulate you, because that's some serious work. And it takes an open mind and an open heart.
Well, thank you very much. And you really give me a test in consciousness here, because it would actually be more vain for me to agree with you that I don't have the background, and it's natural genius that's doing this. But I've walked a path or two.
You certainly
I've walked
have.
A path or two.
You certainly have. You know, I think I've seen you over there in that other one that I didn't get a chance to go down myself. You know what I'm saying? But the fact is that there is a lot of information, whether it's Platonic or Neoplatonic out of the Greek thing, or whether...
No brand names.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Or, you know, whether we dig into the Egyptian thing, you know, we can go lots of ways. We go into the Yoruba, you know, we can go into the Taoist things. The fact is, when you go back far enough, you find, for example, there's a direct connection between Yoruba Ifa and Taoist I Ching. The Odu of the Ifa and the I Ching are almost exactly the same thing.
Odumare.
Excuse me?
Yoruba, Odumare.
Odumare. Yeah. Well, you know, this gets into the emanations, you know, the three that are one. Yeah. Interesting point on that. The Trinity was changed from the Mother, the Father, and the Child by the Roman Catholic Church to the...
The Father, the Son, and my other dad.
Well, you know, the way it was originally was...
They kicked out the woman, man.
Well, the way it originally was the Mother, the Father, the Child, and the Holy Spirit to make them one. But the point I'm trying to get to is this. There is a combination of colors which is involved in all of that. That combination is red, gold, and green. Now, we know now that there's no such color as yellow or gold. In fact, it's only equal amounts of red and green.
Indeed.
That's the three that's one. Red, gold, and green is only one, but it's three. That combination of colors was part of the sign of the cross. This is a whole stack of things, because this is information, encoded information.
Mm. We're going to have to continue more another time, but
that's all right.
It's nice to know that we walk among friends of life.
I assume we are among friends.
Oh, definitely. See you next week.
Later.
This here is Earthwatch.
My name's Robert Knight. If you want to hear more of this kind of thinking and stuff and share some ideas, and then go to World Wide Web, www.wpaifree.org/earthwatch. Email back, rknight@escape.com. Meantime, we just are going to take a moment to celebrate enlightenment and friends. This world, time for maybe a couple more quick phone calls at 279-3400. You're on the air?
Robert, how you doing? Jeff.
Hey, Jeff.
Real fast, just a musical inquiry. What was the name of that group you played for a couple weeks? The something project, Celtic project, and are they available?
You mean Shanghai Lily Dublin?
I'm sorry, Shanghai.
Oh, they're going to be available real soon. They're working on the release of their brand new album, and we had a little production preview of it, and I'm looking forward to having them come down to the studio and lay the latest on us.
Was the previous stuff available?
Oh, yes.
Great.
Phoenix Records, it's in stores, it's around.
Okay, great.
It's produced by the same fellow who produces Sinead O'Connor and a bunch of other great people.
Right. I was getting a big Edie Brickell vibe from that, too. All right, man.
Well, I'll play one of my favorites before I get out of here.
Okay.
You're on the air.
Hi, Robert.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Are you going to be at the big strike meeting tomorrow?
Oh, you mean the Democratic vote on what is to be done?
Yeah, what is to be done? How are you going to vote?
Well, I'm not going to vote.
You're not going to vote?
No.
Why is that?
I'm not qualified to vote.
Oh, you're not a...
I'm not technically qualified to vote.
You're not...
But I watch it with great interest. And we'll see in less than 24 hours.
Do you know how many people are qualified to vote in the union?
No, I don't.
I wonder what it is. The people that are currently paid up.
Well, let's hope it's not a diminishing number, but you can call the union rep here and find out.
Wouldn't it be more valid if all the producers were able to vote?
Well, that's, there are many things to be said about that, but none of them in a few seconds.
What about the gag rule?
Sometimes the things that happen make me gag, you know? Sometimes I gag with a spoon. Sometimes I make gags.
Yeah.
That's about all you're going to get out from me right now.
Thanks.
All right. Matt, this is Earthwatch. Yeah, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Robert. I was listening before. You guys were talking a lot of cosmology-type ideas.
A little bit.
Yeah, sort of. And did want to complete the thought by saying definitely...
please, take a moment. In fact, take a few moments to do that while I make it look easy and run to the other side of the station. I'll be listening. And
okay.
Make it look like I just have that record right here in my hand.
Okay.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
Okay. The point that I wanted to make was that while it was very informative how you two over the telephone there kind of connected one thought to the next thought and then eventually did make most of the listeners, I think, understand where you guys are coming from, I don't think it's necessary that you had to go through that to come to this understanding of where we are in the universe. I don't think you need all those props. But if that's what makes it clear to some people and evident, then fine. But you don't need frequent reminders to come to these understandings. And it's neat that those things are around us, sort of, to remind us. My main point here is let's just not get to answer more, let's not get too centered on our own conceit. I mean, it's pretty interesting that we are these talented monkeys that can get these thoughts going in our heads, but I don't think that that guarantees us any special priority in the universe. Although I think all those thoughts you had were very encouraging. I don't think that we're near an apocalyptic end or that any of the conclusions are necessarily true.
Okay, fair enough. A warning of attitude, I would take that as.
I'm with you. Believe me, I'm not trying to throw water on anybody here, mm-hmm. You know.
Well,
we're amongst friends. I think that as friends, we need to be very, very plain about it.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite expressions is that when somebody wants to know where I'm at, is that I'm at... I'm standing on the point that is directly above the center of the Earth.
Hey, and what do you mean by that? I'm not exactly following you.
Well, by that, I mean, if in a moment of challenge I can remember that, then it suddenly occurs to me that that other monster over there who is messing with my life, you know, is another tendril, another branch of that tree, and it's stupid of me to be schizophrenic and think that I'm dealing with an enemy that I necessarily have to kill or, you know, or to be separated in anger from. And as a result, sometimes, not always, but sometimes my reaction can be more creative. And I just point that out as an explicit benefit of applying that way of thinking.
I agree. And I think that, like I said, the reminders in every direction of the universe that you look are really neat and very helpful to people. But for the people with less talented optics available to them, you can find it all in your bedroom, you know, or in your kitchen, or anywhere you turn.
Exactly.
Remember, we were talking about the philosophy of perception about 2 weeks ago on the phone.
Yes! Oh! Remember you now.
Right.
You had some thoughtful and wise things to say.
Well, it kind of comes down to the same thing as what we were talking about last mm-hmm. time, which is just that if it's in your brain already, brain/mind, whatever you want to call it,
mm-hmm.
in any direction
latent.
That you... What's that?
If it is latent.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. Latent imaging, that kind of a thing, sort of. Anywhere you look, you're going to cast that ideology.
Yes.
Now you can look at the stars and get it.
With a hammer, every problem looks like a nail.
Exactly. And the thing to remember is that are we continuing to cast ourselves as tradesmen, you know, or continue to cast ourselves as carpenters when we look out in the world, we need to occasionally remind ourselves, and this is what I'm trying to bring home here, that we don't have to go through all sorts of things to make that admission. We might just say, hey, okay, this is what we are. We're wondering. We may not ever get a great handle on it. I think if we tend to go to extremes, it really boggles our little monkey minds, and we become apocalyptic. We get into these discussions of eschatology, the end of the world, things are going to be horrible. And I don't know if that necessarily applies.
Well, let me try and sum it up with this confession then. I'm a damn fool whose consistency is marred by occasional glimpses of insight.
This is why I like you. I'm with you.
All right.
Nice talking, Robert. You are amongst friends.
Likewise.
And to the other fellow, I wasn't trying to insult him in any way.
Oh, we know that.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for calling back. This is, of course, Shanghai Lily Dublin.